Friday, May 4th, 2018. Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. One of the main reasons I feel hopeful more often than not is because of how many lies are becoming exposed, how many true intentions are being laid bare, despite the efforts of the war-hungry establishment aggressively ramping up its efforts, and the fact that more are beginning to ask questions than ever before. Now, whether those are the right questions is another debate entirely, but it's not hard to see just how many steps we've taken in the direction of honest-to-God truth just in recent years. Now, this should not be taken as an advocation for Donald Trump or his administration in any way, as I think his selection and the rise of the many varied false alt-news outlets are a clear sign of just how much progress we're making and how much fear we are eliciting in the opposition, as those are the attempts to pull us back into the lies. And to a certain degree, it worked, especially in regard to the 2016 election. But even for many of those swept up by all the America First talk, possibly even Donald Trump himself, it's becoming next to impossible to hide just how contrary the current U.S. policy, both foreign and domestic, are to anything resembling America First. And it's for this reason, and the steadfast efforts of the independent media to expose it, that many are once again beginning to see through the veil of deception, which is why, as I said a few times in recent shows, it's more important than ever to get out there in your own circles and gently drop these seeds to help guide the way for those being lured by fake alt-media promises of false certainty and open-ended claims of impending solutions that never truly materialize. And as we see this establishment fear begin to manifest in open censorship and suppression of voices telling you to think for yourself and question the government narratives, it is paramount that you get out there and show your support for the sources that you feel promote critical thinking and independent thought, be that financially or just by word of mouth, be that The Last American Vagabond or any of the many voices of reason out there being actively shut down by the trembling hand of the diminishing control structure. Because even as we progress, we will see their last grasping efforts to shut us down intensify, and possibly even in ways that disconnect us through traditional means. So prepare yourself for this eventuality and support the voices of truth in any way that you can. Because the moment that we lose that hope, that spark of revolution, that desire for change and the belief to bring it all to fruition is the very moment that we've already lost. Now, on that positively lofty note, let's see what they're keeping from you today. For the first story of the day, coming from theantimedia.com, U.S. Army Special Forces secretly fighting Saudi Arabia's war in Yemen. The U.S. military is more deeply involved in the Saudi war in Yemen than officials have ever admitted. In fact, new evidence suggests that the Pentagon lied to Congress during the March debate about U.S. involvement, presenting the U.S. role as limited to targeting and mid-air refueling of Saudi warplanes. There are actually, in fact, a small number of U.S. special forces on the ground at the Saudi border with Yemen. Those troops have not only been on the ground since late of 2017, which should shock us right there, but that they're on a mission to help Saudi military fight Yemen's Shiite Houthi movement. No public debate has ever taken place with respect to this deployment, which is nothing new, really, when we stand back and look at how all these things develop, and we tend to find them out after the fact, and they give us some kind of reasoning why it's there and why it had to be kept secret. The Pentagon's even gone to great lengths not to tell the American public or Congress about the Green Berets they sent to the border, which were intended to help Saudi, quote, locate and destroy Houthi missile caches and attack Houthi launch sites inside Yemen. This has all been going on despite the Trump administration telling Congress that Americans' involvement in Yemen was purely, quote, non-combat. And again, despite the Pentagon repeatedly saying that America's sole involvement in Yemen was logistics and support for air war. Now, but this is such a running theme we've seen going on for a long time, how these things, like Niger is a perfect example, how we didn't find out how Americans were dying there until well after the fact, until they were forced to reveal it. These secret wars are going on all around the world, and what it should really make us ask is how many more are going on that we're not even aware of right now? And the fact that we need to understand that what's been going on in Yemen has been condemned all around the world, even by the UN, for the fact that civilians are actively dying. What's being carried out there is a gross human rights violation, and always trying to make it seem like they're not directly involved. But now we find out that the U.S. military is directly involved with what's going on the ground. So that has to shock us, especially as we see allegations being thrown out about Syria and other places in the world because they're not U.S. allies. about human rights violations while this is happening right in front of us. But the positive thing here is that simply understanding this and seeing through the facade now may actually, you know, bring about the possibility for change, as it rarely happens with Congress today, but the possibility is more than we had before. As the author states, this very well might provide a new pretext for a vote on ending U.S. involvement in the Yemen war, as Congress lacked all the information they needed to have an informed vote in March. So hopefully we'll see some people stand up in Congress. It rarely happens today, but maybe with this information and with all the condemnation about what's going on there around the world, we might actually see some change here. So let's cross our fingers and hope that we actually see Congress live up to what they're supposed to do, which is actually represent the will of the people. Moving on to the next story coming from mintpressnews.com, Pence outlines interventionist plans in Cuba, Nicaragua, and Venezuela. Ramping up interventionist rhetoric and policy against progressive governments in the region, United States Vice President Mike Pence said working for freedom in Cuba, Nicaragua, and Venezuela is a priority for Donald Trump's administration during a ceremony in which the new U.S. ambassador to the Organization of American States was sworn in. Quote, "We will stay by the side of those who long for freedom, and we will confront their oppressors," Pence said during an event at the White House. During his speech, the U.S. vice president singled out Cuba, Nicaragua, and Venezuela. Of Cuba, he said the island continued to live under tyrannical legacy, using terminology and rhetoric used by right-wing Cuban Americans against the communist government of Cuba. Later, it was Nicaragua's turn. Pence accused Daniel Ortega's government of brutally repressing peaceful protesters, a common allegation used by the U.S. and their allies to justify interference despite lacking proper evidence to back their claims, which is exactly what we saw attempted to take place with Iran during the color war protests that happened in the very recent past. Now, it's very frustrating to see this play out. It's like literally copy, cut and paste. We're taking the exact same things and applying it to different nations that are simply not U.S. allies. And it's very frustrating to see this continue to play out, despite the disgusting history of not only human rights violations, but the absolute decimation of any of these countries that the U.S. tries to play God with and step in and manipulate things and, you know, have basically CIA-backed coups and pull people out and put in a dictator, as opposed to the people that are fighting for an actual democratic election, which always under the guise of the exact opposite. This is documentable history at this point. And we've already seen it attempted to be played out in Venezuela, and Iran's been on under the crosshairs for a very long time. But it's very frustrating to see this continually played out, where it's like, how can we not see how this continues to happen? Almost the same playbook used the exact same way. And you could even make the argument that hypothetically, let's say it was with the best of intentions, the U.S. history in doing exactly this, they are batting 1,000 here. Every time they step in and try to manipulate a country, it ends up in the absolute decimation of the country, which is kind of ridiculous when it always seems to be the claim that they're trying to help the people and the oppressed, brutally repressed, peaceful protesters. And at the end of the day, they come in and manipulate things and it ruins the country for those very people they're claiming to protect. We just have to begin to see how this plays out. It's all for political reasons. It's all for geopolitical efforts. It has nothing to do with helping people. Moving on to the next story coming from the CorbettReport.com, 4 ways the crime lab can frame you. Well, this is such a fantastic article that, I mean, for any out there that aren't familiar with James Corbett's work, I highly recommend that you get out there and support him in any way you can and just really dive into his research, because he, in my opinion, is one of the most meticulous, well-researched journalists out there in the independent media today. And his work is so fantastic. And it really, even things that I think that I fully understand, he'll come out with some kind of an article and just completely change my perspective in ways, and not just with opinion, but with absolute well-researched facts. And that's what it all comes down to. And this article is something that really blew my mind, because all of this stuff, it doesn't surprise me. It's something that I would have been like, yeah, I expect that. But I was still shocked to find these things out, and actually more shocked that I didn't already know that these things were basically frauds, this pseudoscience, as he calls it. Now, he gives 4 great examples of things that the average person likely doesn't know and likely thinks are completely indisputable based on CSI. And I mean, I also like to point out here that this is a perfect example of how well predictive programming and social engineering works on the American mind and the world for that matter. Because we sit here and watch CSI and these different movies, and then we feel, we think, we know, and we understand how these things work. And this, these 4 points are probably going to blow your mind. The first one, number one, is microscopic hair analysis is made-up pseudoscience. The entire field of microscopic hair comparison is a made-up pseudoscience invented for the express purpose of helping the FBI convict whoever the prosecutors want to convict. If this sounds like a jaw-dropping accusation, it is. And it's now formally acknowledged by the FBI and published on the front page of the Washington Post. Quote, the Justice Department and FBI have formally acknowledged that nearly every examiner in an elite FBI forensic unit gave flawed testimony in almost all trials in which they offered evidence against criminal defendants over more than a two-decade period before 2000. This is something that just really shocked me because I think we all tend to kind of see the way that works out. Oh, they find a piece of hair and the DNA. And, you know, I think it's probably because most of us don't fully understand what really goes on and how that process works. But he makes a very clear case about somebody that was in prison for like 20 years based on the idea that they found a piece of hair on some mask that was found at the scene and said it was his hair, despite the fact that he had 12 people testify that he was in another state at the time of the murder. He served 20 years until they found out that the hair that they found in there wasn't his hair. And it turns out it was a dog's hair. And really, this goes to plays two parts there. One, that they're willing to manipulate the evidence to suit whatever need they want, to get an arrest whoever they want. But also that the science behind it is flawed in its essence. So that blew my mind. I was completely shocked by that one. The next one, number two, the FBI crime lab confuses urine samples with explosive residue. On the Corbett Report in 2012, Dr. Whitehurst talked about his shoddy work in the FBI crime lab and the fact that agents routinely altered reports and handled evidence improperly to help support the prosecution in high-profile cases. One famous example, the OKC bombing. In Dr. Whitehurst's estimation, one agent in the lab gave false testimony about ammonium nitrate samples found in the rubble that helped the feds prosecute their case against Terry Nichols. As Whitehurst summed up, quote, how far would the government go to get the jurors to believe something? How far would they go? At the crime laboratory, it was a regular practice for people to testify outside of their area of expertise. One agent altered my reports for 5 years, most of which were altered to support the prosecutor. But this one is very interesting Whitehurst talks about how he was basically told to omit information in these reports. And when he refused, he was fired for it. And they brought someone in who was willing to lie. And it's just, again, the 2 points here are always the showing you that they're willing to manipulate the data to basically get what they want. And as well as the fact that the science behind it is flawed. I think for all of these points, that seems to be the clear overarching idea here. And as always, I recommend you read this article in its entirety because I'm just skimming over these points and there is so much information, as always, with his work. But these points, really just the idea behind this, it should show you that these things we think we know are not exactly what we're told. And I think that is something we should be seeing in every day, in every regard. But when it comes to the people that we're told are these righteous, altruistic entities that are only out to help us and solve crime, it shows you that really, they're just trying to do their jobs and get what they want. Number three, lie detectors are a lie. And one that's been known for decades, at least. As far back as 1998, the Supreme Court noted, quote, there is simply no consensus that polygraph evidence is reliable. The scientific community and the state and federal courts are extremely polarized on the matter. Decades later, the consensus is still that there's no consensus, but there is less polarization on the matter. In short, as a criminal tool, it is unreliable at best and dangerous at worst. Quote, a 1997 survey of 421 psychologists estimated the test's average validity is about 61%, a little better than chance. And the University of Utah psychologist published a 1994 report that suggested biting your tongue, pressing your toes to the floor, and counting backwards by sevens during controlled questions would screw up the accuracy of the polygraphs. Now, I think the polygraph is something I think we all come to understand is not as accurate as they once made it out to be. But again, there's plenty of people in all of these regards that are in prison, probably still today, based on these flawed efforts, the way they're presented as completely conclusive when in fact they're not. Again, the lie detector one is, I think of all of them, is one that we've seen in every movie that's being constantly presented as a kind of catch-all. Oh, well, let's, you know, give them the lie detector and we'll know for sure. When in reality, it's completely manipulatable and it's based completely on the person conducting the test. That's what it comes down to, is that it's their interpretation of what they're looking at. And I think that's what it goes on to explain very clearly. Number four, the biggest one in my opinion, fingerprints are also subjective and unreliable. As James eloquently puts it, it's all basically guesswork and interpretation. And the fallible humans doing that guesswork, even if angels of the noblest sort, are going to get it wrong a lot. One startlingly simple demonstration of this fact was designed by a cognitive neuroscientist who recognized that fingerprint analysis is largely subjective and thus prone to copious amounts of cognitive bias. His idea: get analysts to reanalyze fingerprints that they'd already looked at and see if they come up with different analyses. Five fingerprint, quote, experts were recruited for the test. They were given, without their knowledge, sets of fingerprints they had examined in the past, but this time with different case histories that included information designed to bias them in the opposite direction. And the result? The experts contradicted their original analysis in almost all of the cases. Now, I think this one's the most startling because the idea of the fingerprint is something that is just roundly believed to be indisputable. And it turns out, based on the evidence at hand, this kind of study, of course, no one's heard of, shows you that it's largely based on the interpretations of the person they deem the expert. And it clearly, based on the biased information supporting it, leads them one way or another with the information. So we see that this, how all of these cases, all four of these examples, are all being used in those two ways, whether it's to intentionally, maliciously lead everybody in one direction to suit the narrative of the police, or because the science is flawed to begin with. And as James makes very clear in this entire article, that where we're headed with all this AI information and, you know, thought crime and the idea of the kind of minority report idea of predicting who's going to commit crimes, this is all stuff that's being developed today. It's why we would trust what they have to say with these things and how valid they are is absolutely beyond me. But we need to begin to stand back and look at all the information presented here and understand that a lot of what we think we know is based on predictive programming and social engineering. And we're being manipulated into thinking that these things are just undeniable, when in reality, it's not that case at all. Moving on to the next story coming from ZeroHedge.com, Trump cuts off funding for Syria's white helmets. The U.S. has provided at least $32 million to the white helmets, around one-third of their total funding, through a U.S. aid scheme orchestrated by the Obama State Department and funneled to the white helmets using a Washington, D.C. contractor participating in USAID's Syria regional program. Yet now the Trump State Department has frozen funding to the controversial and falsely self-named Syrian aid group known as the White Helmets, the organization which provided the sole evidence that Syrian President Bashar al-Assad allegedly used chemical weapons on his own people in an April 7th attack on the city of Douma. And of course, the White Helmets are doing their absolute best to frame this in a way that looks like the U.S. is deciding to end its support for life-saving efforts in Syria, as opposed to pulling funding from a terror-supporting, false-flag-executing propaganda gang. And we can no doubt expect that the anti-Trump side of the empire-loyalist White Helmets-glorifying Western media to jump all over this as a way to make it look like Trump is, by default, allowing children to die. When in fact, this is one of the very few moves that I feel is the exact opposite of that by the Trump administration, and a very good thing. Yet I feel this was a damage control move at the end of the day, and how revealing it is truly that we see this happen now, when we know that the entire Western chemical weapons attack narrative is resting solely on the falsified videos and claims of the White Helmets. And yet, with this clear show of disavowal, there have been no apologies, no retractions, no follow-up stories showing just how grossly misled the people were and how wildly negligent and more likely complicit, if not entirely involved, the U.S. was in the false flag itself, and then followed by the U.S.-led attacks, again, based entirely on this group that was just defunded. We know that the OPCW found nothing at both the sites of the bombings and the case in Douma, and that everyone there is now speaking out against this now the clear lies of the U.S.-led Western nations behind this recent attack. I mean, we've seen the idea that the doctors on the ground and how there was absolutely no chemicals there. There was all smoke inhalation. I mean, every single thing that they've laid out to base the entire effort behind this has all been completely falling apart right in front of us. And now we see this coming out where they're kind of quietly trying to make it quietly defunding the white helmets. It just shows you that. So everything they did, the open aggression on a sovereign nation was based on this one group's lies, and now they're pulling their funding for that group, but yet we're not talking about that. That's not a huge story to say, oh my God, look at everything they just said was a lie, and they're even pulling their funding from the group that gave them those lies. It's absolutely crazy. This is the way these things play out. And it's also should be very transparent that the entire regime change effort through Syria is all kind of surrounding this. And this kind of thing needs to really stand out to us. As I always say, this silence behind these things often speaks louder than their aggressive, active ways of trying to denounce it. The fact that they're not even touching this story, it should show us everything we need to see here. But I think this is a very good step. The fact that they're defunding this group, I mean, we'll see how it plays out. Things may change in the following months. But I think this is a good step. But as I said, I feel this is more of a damage control move, trying to pull their funding, hoping no one notices so they can say, oh, we're not funding that group that everyone just found out is lying the entire time. It's very interesting. So we'll keep up with this story, but this is something I feel like we should spread around. Make sure you get this in front of all those people that are never going to see it while watching the mainstream media. Moving on to the final story of the day, coming from mintpressnews.com. As IDF uses Gaza protesters for shoot-to-maim target practice, Israel argues human rights don't apply to this war. Israeli officials have deemed peaceful protests by Palestinian refugees in the Gaza Strip to be tantamount to a state of war, arguing that soldiers were well within their rights to fire live ammunition at unarmed protesters participating in ongoing mass mobilizations at the Eastern Fence enclosing the besieged territory. In response to a high court petition by human rights advocates, authorities in Tel Aviv noted that, quote, the state opposes the applying of human rights law during an armed conflict, arguing that even the Red Cross deemed human rights law inapplicable during wartime. The simple fact that they're calling this wartime, when you're talking about armed behind bunkers and fences, and then you have peaceful protesters, or even if you want to debate the word peaceful, which I don't think you can, but the idea that you're protesters, including women and children on the other side of a fence, calling that wartime and then saying human rights don't apply there because you're at war is wildly Orwellian, and I think it's just kind of they're taking a page out of the U.S. book, or maybe the U.S. is taking a page out of Israel's book. Either way, it's absolutely untrue. According to the Gaza Health Ministry, 50 Palestinians have been killed in the protests, while over 6,200 protesters have sustained injuries at the hands of Israeli forces deploying live ammunition or rubber-coated steel rounds and other less lethal munitions. The state attorney's argument attempts to give international and domestic legal status to the military suppression of peaceful protests and the suppression of international human rights law enforcement, allowing occupation forces the right to use lethal force against unarmed demonstrators. Many protesters are struck by a new explosive type of ammunition known as the butterfly bullet, which causes massive deformities and creates exit wounds as large as a fist. The bullet expands upon hitting targets, decimating human flesh or bone, or pulverizing internal organs, according to local health officials. This is what's used by the Israeli army snipers from behind bunkers and electrified fences against demonstrators, including children, on the borders of Gaza. Now, regardless of the many positive steps we've seen recently, be it the developing peace with the Koreas, the defunding of the White Helmets, the fact that Trump did not immediately jump on Netanyahu's lies about Iran, until we see an even-handed stance on the world stage in regard to U.S. allies, specifically Saudi Arabia and Israel, arguably the two worst human rights violators in the world, then I would argue that we are seeing no real change at all. Now, I do not mean heavy-handed action, as we were once recently promised that the U.S. would no longer be the policeman of the world, but clearly we have seen the opposite. With the same interventionist authoritarian efforts being carried out around the world and at home, and the same blatant disregard for the Constitution and the inherent rights it outlines, it is clear that the same behind-the-scenes powers are pulling the strings. So we must not let a few positive steps blind us to the never-changing war-focused direction that is still being maintained. We should celebrate the good steps, feel hopeful even, but stay the course, fight for change, and never lose sight of the reality of what is being carried out in our names. For more information on the topics discussed, make sure you check out thelastamericanvagabond.com or any of the important independent sources in the show notes below. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.